So, I don't know if you realize this, but every time we look at a passage from the Bible here in Palmerston Place, exactly the same passage as being looked at in our sister church, which is now our church, which is in Gorgie. Because of that, this week, because I knew Dean was preaching on the same passage, I gave him a phone and said to, I won't bother going in the details of what I said to him, but we had a brief chat, I think we could say, about the direction of our sermons. And I was really pleased to hear that Dean, who's been a minister for 20 years, a very experienced preacher, found these passages challenging also. And for the same and slightly unusual reasons. Normally when a passage is challenging, it's because the message it confronts us with is something or contains truths with which we struggle. But with this tale, with the tale of Noah's Ark, it's because when we don't look at the story of Noah very frequently. And when we do, we don't look at it as an adult believer. For many of us, our primary engagement with the story came at an early age. And for me, again, that slightly handicaps us, because without realizing it, we might struggle to relate to its adult themes, used as we've been to making animal-related crafts from it. So let's start by why we're looking at the story. And Jessica alluded to this a few minutes ago, which is a theme underlying and something we will look at over the next few weeks. The character of Noah is someone who does an unlikely thing for God. We have to imagine that we are faced here with a character who was prepared to put up with a lot of mockery, a lot of discomfort and disappointment for his beliefs. And this aspect of the story is the one that I'm going to be centering on today. In light of this, our challenge today is to ask ourselves the question of how much we all trust in God. That's something which you may instantly want to say, well, of course we trust in God, we're good Christians. But I want you to think about that during what I'm about to talk about, to see how true is that. Are we prepared to build arcs of our own for our outreach if we feel that's what God is prompting us to do? Now, don't worry, I'm not suggesting that we get our hammers and go around hassling the local wildlife. But even faced with our wet summer, I don't think that's going to be our task. But it's not much of a stretch to think of our parish as composed of water stretching out to the horizons. It's a huge parish. Remember, it ends at Socton Prison. So, and there we need to set forth into that parish. We need to build our best arcs, we might say, to send out, to encourage people out there to see us as offering fertile land where they need to come to grow in their faith and to grow in their lives. To help us with this and to see if the story of Noah can inspire us, let's look at another mention of Noah in the Bible, which is from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. In that we read, "By faith Noah, when warned about things not seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith he condemned the world and became heir of righteousness that is in keeping with faith." The first three words of that, "by faith Noah," are in many ways the key. So many times we can look at someone who's done something amazing and give them individual credit. But for us all, as believers, our faith plays a much larger role than our individual abilities or our individual accomplishments. That's what we need to think of when we plan our outreach work. And for the character of Noah, it was the same. Everything he did flowed from his faith. Without his faith, none of what he did was possible. Let's look at the next phrase in that verse from Hebrews. When warned about things not seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. No one in the time of Noah could most likely have imagined a catastrophic flood coming and wiping out the earth. Now, I don't want to go into diversion at the moment to look at the story of floods and other documents of this period. Let's just focus on the story of the message that we get from the passage which Douglas read for us earlier, the story of the flood. We can certainly say that in the context of that story, that the flood seems to have been an unexpected event within that narrative. Yet Noah received a word from God that it was coming, and his response was twofold: holy fear and action. As always, when we are reading or heeding scripture, we always need to ask ourselves if we can see parallels to ourselves that can help us. We need to see if we can react to revelations from God in the same way through these two steps: holy fear and action. I want to clarify here, though, what I mean by holy fear. This is not just being scared. That's an understandable response to contemplating new endeavors, such as trying some new outreach for our new large expanded parish. But holy fear is about reverence for God that no other than God deserves. It's the first step in obedience. The Hebrew word is translated holy fear here. It's the same word at the end of Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7. I'll read that passage to you. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to one who could save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverent submission. What is translated reverent submission is the same word as fear when talking about Noah's response. This kind of fear is acknowledging that certain things lie out with our power and are in the hands of God. It means starting from a place where we see the size of the task, but we also see the size of our God. The next important stage is that then comes action. Faith is not faith without action. Noah believed the word of God and built an ark that would take decades to build. It's not enough to have faith. We are called to act on our faith. One of the reasons to look at the story of Noah is that we can see the importance of action, even when we're being asked to do something that sounds misguided or illogical. We heard in today's passage that Noah was asked to bring in two of all living creatures. I'm sure that his first question would have been to himself to ask, is that even going to work? What about food for us all? We just went from building a boat to building a zoo that floats. Last time I checked, if I put lions and zebras together, we'd be short of one pair of those at the end of the journey. Any person in that position would want to know how this was going to work. We don't see that struggle of Noah's psyche during the scriptural passage, but what we do know is that Noah did what God asked him to do. Only a character who has reverent fear and respect for God would even consider such a project. Yet we see that Noah's faith compelled him to act. Not only compelled him, but, and this is the key for us, it was the reason for success. Without faith, nothing would have been possible. If we want a faith like Noah, this story says, we've got to do everything just as God commands. In verse 22 that you heard Douglas read, we heard this line, Noah did everything just as God commanded him to. This is a great barrier for us in our faith, doing everything just as God commands. We can make excuses. We are so creative when it comes to our reasons why we don't do everything just as God commands. I don't think Noah knew exactly how he was going to get all those animals onto the ark together, but he just did the things he could and left the rest up to God. That is the blend of holy fear and action, which together added up to Noah's faith. Remember, one of the gifts of God that the story tells us about was that the animals came to Noah. Noah did what he could. He built the ark and trusted by faith that God would somehow get all those animals in there. We can become so paralyzed by what we see as impossible that we don't even do what is possible. If Noah waited to build the ark until he knew how he was going to get the animals on the ark, the flood would have come and washed him away as well. If we want to have faith like Noah, we should do what we can and leave the rest up to God. So we need to build our arcs, our outreach projects, and trust in God that the human animals will come. Always remember, though, it is not our job to save the world. It's our job to tell the world about the Savior. It is God who changes hearts, not us. But we are called and commanded to tell others about the one who changed our hearts. It is easy to get overwhelmed by large projects, especially when our resources seem depleted. But we don't need to have everything figured out. If we can tell through prayerful consideration that God has pointed us in a certain direction, we can start by taking just one step. That's how the impossible happens in faith. Noah gets the word from the Lord to build an ark, so he cuts down the first tree. If we want to experience all the things God has for us, then we need to make the decision to let God out of the well-constructed boxes that we've tried to package God in. The fact is, God normally does things in unusual ways. Most of us have had the experience of praying for an answer to a life dilemma, and the answer, when it comes, is in a way we never imagined or could have planned. In fact, normally it comes when we didn't expect it, in ways we never thought of, and involving people we never thought would be involved. That's God's way. God is not limited by to our ways of doing things. But sometimes we can limit God by trying to govern or work out how God's promises will be fulfilled. The fact is, when it comes to God's promises, the best thing we can do is lay aside all our preconceived ideas and our self-imagined roots and just turn our heads towards God and say, I don't know how, when, or who you're going to use to do what you have promised, but I just know that you will do what you have promised. And then leave the rest to God. In John 3, chapter 3, verse 8, we hear, the wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit. What a great comparison that is. Just as we can't govern or control the natural wind, that because neither can we govern or control what God does. Like the wind, God is not contained or controlled by any other and blows where and when God chooses, whether it feels unusual to us or not. It is when we begin to accept this truth that we can begin to expect God to do unusual things in our lives and in the life of our church and the situations we face, and we can be blessed and amazed by what happens. It is when we can begin to experience that our unlimited God can make a way where there seems to be no way. Isn't this a better, more enjoyable way of walking with a living God? Isn't this a more exciting way than waking up every morning thinking you know everything God is going to do and how God is going to do it, only later, again, to be disappointed when it doesn't happen as you'd planned or thought it would? You only have to read the Bible to see God's proven track record for doing unusual things, both in the Old Testament and the New. As Jessica said a few minutes ago, we will look at some of these tales over the next few weeks. But throughout all the stories, the common theme is that sometimes we have to allow God to do things that don't make sense to us in order for God's will to be done. I think many of us have stopped expecting God to move in the same way that God did in the Bible, through miracles, signs, and wonders. For the most part, our culture has put God into a box, a nice, safe box, where we believe that God can only move so far, only far enough to where it still makes sense for us. When the Spirit of God moves in ways that don't make sense, many people don't know how to react. So when God tells us to do something that defies logic, a thing that seems to be impossible, many of us are going to not know how to react to that and doubt it. That's when we always have to remember Noah being told to build a huge ark in the desert when it never rained that heavily before, because God told him it was going to become a flood. The instructions didn't make sense in human logic, but there was success because God was behind it. The people of God who seem to make the biggest differences are the people who step out and do things that most people won't, because they think it's crazy to do that. When you're doing unexpected things for God, sometimes all you have to stand on is blind faith in God alone. In the Bible, God moved frequently in ways that weren't logical. Why do we expect God today to be different from that? Perhaps now the daring things of God are no longer celebrated, but feared. We're not open to saying things like the disciples did. We have seen remarkable things today. Why do we feel like God must make sense to us? Why is it so hard for us to believe that God can still do the miraculous, no matter how unexpected it might look? It is important to remember that God is so much bigger than our small human minds can comprehend. It's important that we don't let our logic box in faith. When Jesus chose his disciples, many of the religious people of the day couldn't comprehend why he was using a ragtag of misfit sinners instead of the Pharisees, who held a high moral code and who knew the Bible of the time, of the period, the Hebrew scriptures, back and forth. It didn't make sense that Jesus was hanging out with prostitutes and sinners and preaching on the streets instead of in the Jewish temples. That's why they didn't believe that Jesus was God. But if they thought if he was God, in their mind, he would have been that the logical thing to do would have been to be in the temples and to be working with the Pharisees. But Jesus was working out of the box that they had come to believe that God had to operate in. And because of that, they missed the living God right in front of them because it didn't accord with their logic. In Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, it says, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask and imagine, according to his power that is in work within us. I'm going to read that again. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask and imagine, according to his power that is in work within us. Hearing those words, we need to ask ourselves, as we contemplate this next stage of our church's life, do we really believe that? Do we really believe those words in Ephesians? Even if we are mocked or we have to take financial risks, do we have faith in something that we know God has told us? So the next question, obviously, is what is God telling us to do? If it's something that looks foolish to others, but we know without a doubt is from God, then that we need to listen to that. And our vision date was part of trying to discern that. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 27 says that God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. Whose voice are we all going to believe? Will we be obedient to God or to the opinions of the world? It is also important to remember that when God tells us to do something, it might not always work out in the way we thought it would. It might even look like failure to our eyes. But you can guarantee that it is working for the good according to God's purpose, no matter what it looks like on the outside. Paul, in the book of Acts, was told just to go and preach and build the church. He had no building, no elder team, no fundraising plan. Everywhere that he went, there was either a revival or a riot. Surely the revival seemed to prove that Paul was doing God's will, but the riots looked dangerous to those watching. I'm sure they couldn't possibly understand how that could be part of God's ordained plan. Most of the Old Testament prophets were run out of the cities that God sent them to speak in. The disciples were jailed, beaten, martyred, and killed. In logical terms, this seemed like a failure, but it was part of the plan all along. We are only responsible for being obedient, no matter how illogical what we've been told to do is. God is responsible for the results. So let's step out in faith, build our arcs, and leave the rest up to God as the rainbow shines above us.